Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories. Good morning. Welcome. Hello. Come on in. Grab a seat. Come hang out. Welcome to the show. This is Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, the one and only campus community radio station up on the very top of Simon Burnaby Mountain at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from the unceded territory of the Hulkamilam and Squamish-speaking peoples. My name is Jesse, here with you this hour to present you with a bunch of cool talk pieces, as well as a little bit of music, as we are wont to do. Today on the show, we will be featuring a story from Ellen Taylor about an NDP press conference on reproductive rights and freedoms with David Eby and Wabkanu, the premiers of BC and Manitoba, respectively. And then we will have a piece from Rebecca Godsmark, about the SFU Disability and Neurodiversity Alliance's upcoming Turntable RPG event. So that's all coming up. You can look forward to both of those stories. But first, we are going to start, as we usually do, with a little bit of local music. And this time we are turning to the group Piano, spelled P:ANO, formed in 1999 by local music legends Nick Kurgovich and Larissa Lovia. Nick has a whole bunch of solo releases out. Larissa has many releases out under the name Kellarissa. Joined by a couple friends, they have made five albums now, with a 19-year gap between the most recent two. They just put out their brand new record, Ba Ba Ba, on September 17th, which by my calculations is Tuesday. And it's great, and it features the opening track, A Bit of Coquitlam. So we are going to get hyper-local here with a track by the Greater Vancouver area's own Piano. This is A Bit of Coquitlam.
Losing count, I did the hooky.
pokey, then turned myself around and drove into town. I've been to your place, and you've been to mine. Childhood bedrooms, still fresh in my mind. The smell of your parents' house, faint in the air. Funny what just goes nowhere.
By Piano here on Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, a local track with a local focus. And joining me in studio now is Alan Taylor, who is CJSF's new journalist as part of the Local Journalism Initiative. And we started this program with an idea to focus on the hyper-local, and in particular in areas like Coquitlam, which don't have a ton of news going on. But today, Alan, you're here to talk to us about a story that has, province-wide and even sort of broader than that, implications.
Yep, that's right. So Indigenous sisters were watching as press and politicians flooded into the Canadian Memorial Centre for Peace on September 12, 2024 in Vancouver, BC, to witness the media advisory by BC NDP Premier David Eby and Premier of Manitoba Wab Kinew, called to announce the funding of single-cycle IVF treatment in British Columbia, and the funding of free birth control was announced in Manitoba as of October 1st. CJSF attended the media advisory and observed the shift of the discussion in the Q&A from reproductive rights and freedoms to an opportunity for major news channels and teleconference attendees to grab a story on the carbon tax announcements released by the BC Conservatives just shortly before and after the advisory concluded. At 10 a.m., just before the media advisory was announced, John Roustad released a statement so-called slamming the BC NDP premier for both supporting the carbon tax and at the same time vowing to retract it. The timely release brings to light the need for the televised press to get the story rather than focus on the topic at hand. And yet again, we saw a media advisory take the direction of what corporate and national press see as important, carbon over discussions about women's reproductive freedom. Since the BC Conservatives had already released their commentary on Eby's policies toward the carbon tax, CJSF observed the press push conservative perspectives rather than allowing the discussion about reproductive health care and reproductive freedom to take hold, despite also being tax relevant. We can take a listen now.
My colleague Nikki Sharma is here, the Attorney General. Canada's best Attorney General. I'm going to turn over to Jimmy to welcome our friends from the media to ask any questions they wish, because that's how we roll around here.
It is. Thanks for joining us, everyone. We have members of the media here in person, as well as those on the phone line. For those on the phone line, please press star 1 to enter the queue. All members of the media will be limited to one question and one follow-up. We're going to start on the phone and then come back here in person. We're going to start with Richard Sussman from Global News. Go ahead, Richard.
Premier Eby, I'm sure you've seen that the federal NDP leader Jagmeet Singh said today that he has significant concerns with the federal carbon tax, especially around the impact it has on everyday Canadians. Premier Pinu, your standing beside, has raised concerns in the past. There are criticisms being levied against you that you and Prime Minister Justin Trudeau are the only leaders left who are in support of this carbon tax. Is your thinking changing at all when it comes to
Well, BC has had a carbon tax that has worked well for years, reducing emissions while we grow our economy. It's one of the tools we've used to address climate change. And I think it's critical to also recognize that the context of the challenge for British Columbians has changed. A lot of British Columbians are struggling with affordability. And the political consensus that we had in British Columbia has been badly damaged by the approach of the federal government to this issue. Our commitment is that if the federal government decides to remove the legal backstop requiring us to have a consumer carbon tax in British Columbia, we will end the consumer carbon tax in British Columbia. And we will, because we believe that climate change is real and not a hoax, and that we are required to take action on climate change for our kids, like Baby Gwen, and for all of our communities. We will ensure that the big polluters pay the carbon price in our province to make sure that we're taking action on climate change while protecting people.
And Richard, do you have a follow-up question?
Classic for you, it's a two-parter unrelated from my colleagues. First one is the local association of Harper yesterday filed a lawsuit in BC Supreme Court challenging the constitutionality of drip amendment, saying that BC's implementation of the legislation amounts to a transference of governance power to an entity that is not responsible to the legislative assembly of the electorate or BC. What is your reaction to this lawsuit that has been filed in terms of whether there are concerns around the ongoing TRIPA legislation in place? And also, there's a concern here around an ongoing IIO case that I'm going to get you the name for here, around the Patricia Hotel, which I'm sure you are familiar with. And there's a question about why it took so long in that case to get a final report to Crown, and any concerns about lack of IIO staff resources.
Thanks, Richard. I'll take the second question first. The Independent Investigation Office gets involved when there's a serious incident involving police where someone's seriously injured or killed. They have had historically a big challenge getting their investigations done in a timely way. We've done a lot of work with the IIO to break down those times, especially in cases where under the previous head of the IIO, Ron McDonald, where he was really able to distinguish the cases that needed extra attention, those that didn't. They have had challenges completing some investigations in a timely way. Sometimes that's related to the willingness and ability of witnesses to come forward and provide information. Sometimes there are other challenges. I don't know this case specifically, but I do know that we've been working with the IIO to make sure that their times of concluding the investigations are quick, to support both families that are affected, as well as officers that are involved in high-profile incidents. It's out of fairness for everybody that they operate as quickly as possible to reach their conclusions. On the other question, the critical question, and the ongoing challenge of our province, frankly, of how we move forward as a province in partnership with Indigenous people, recognizing the work that we've got to do, recognizing the constitutional rights of Indigenous people in our province, the rights and title of Indigenous people in British Columbia. I think we've had some pretty remarkable success in breaking through on this issue. I want you to cast your mind back to a time when John Rostad was cabinet minister responsible for Indigenous relations in British Columbia, when the Cariboo-Chilcotin decision came down from the Supreme Court of Canada, the government of BC spent a decade fighting the Cariboo-Chilcotin in court, spending millions on a court battle, resulting in a decision from the Supreme Court of Canada declaring title over a large swath of the middle of British Columbia, without any real path forward or understanding of how that would work and what would happen next, throwing into chaos small businesses, decisions around infrastructure, and everything else. It is not the path forward. Court is not the path forward with Indigenous people. Sitting down, working out agreements, finding a path forward like we did with the Haida and Haida Gwaii is the path forward. And it provides economic benefits in the form of certainty for everybody. It lifts people out of grinding poverty. We have lots of people living in this province who are Indigenous, who are living in grinding poverty. When we support Indigenous nations in building their economic future, everybody benefits. We've seen the whole region benefit when that happens. And the success we've had in mining of three major new mines in the Northwest, one that hit substantial construction, another brand new mine that's open, and one that's entering the environmental assessment process, all of those have substantial Indigenous participation. And it is the path forward for our province. I'm fighting Indigenous people in court. On the specific issue of Pender Harbor, and the docks, we worked hard with Waterfront Protection Coalition to find a path forward of addressing docks that were environmentally damaging, that were killing fish, that were unpermitted, and a huge concern to the Seychelles First Nation, as well as many other residents of the Sunshine Coast. And we came to a way of recognizing those long-standing family docks that people love to swim off and are part of family life, and the environmental threat to fish and to the Seychelles First Nations cultural practices around fish, and frankly, all British Columbians' love of fish and ensuring that we protect that resource for future generations. It was hard work. I understand that this group still wants to go to court on that. That's their right. I'm a lawyer. I would never criticize someone's ability or right to go to court. But I don't think it's the path forward for our province.
Our next question will come from Katie DeRosa from CBC News. Go ahead, Katie.
Hi there. Can I ask a question to Premier Canoe about his approach to the current government to present Manitoba? Where is that at, and what's your general position on the carbon tax, and why do you think you are at odds with Premier Eby?
Katie, you cut out on the first part, which might have explained why you thought Bob and I were at odds on this issue. Bob and I are in alignment on this issue. We both are in the same position of a federal backstop and a federal requirement, just like every conservative premier across Canada, around the carbon tax. We both believe that climate change is real, and certainly I'm a strong believer that we need to make sure that the big polluters are paying, that we put a price on carbon for those big polluters. The first part of your question cut out though, so maybe you want to repeat that part, Katie, and then I'll pass the mic over to Bob.
Yes, I was wondering if Premier Canoe could express his position on the carbon tax, and basically, is that odd to
the piece? Well, I think what Premier Eby has said makes a lot of sense. Where I'm coming from, and where so many people across Canada are coming from right now, is that we know that climate change is real and requires us to take strong action to solve. But I'm worried that the politicization of this issue is causing us to lose a generation of Canadians, causing us to lose so many people from the blue collar, and we can't afford that. We have to keep moving forward with climate action, and part of that means during this affordability crisis of high interest rates and high inflation that we've lived through for the past few years, we have to show flexibility on the affordability side of things. And if we can be flexible right now to send a message to the rank and file member of the blue collar, to send the message to the young Canadian today, that we understand where you're at, and that's why a climate-friendly government is on your side, then I think that that's the best climate policy that we can adopt at this moment. Of course, we're going to be doing all those things to reduce emissions and to incentivize a low-carbon economy, but we got to keep a critical mass of Canadians on side with solving the climate crisis.
And Katie, you have a follow-up question.
Yes, so Premier, basically, has your position changed now, saying that you would, you know, scrap the carbon tax if the federal government were to change its position? Where is that coming from? Is that led from pressure from other opposition groups like the BC Conservatives, or is the public mood souring on the carbon tax?
Well, we had a consensus for a long time in British Columbia on the carbon tax. I think that a series of decisions made from the federal government has really politicized the issue in a way that's incredibly unfortunate, and has had an impact right across the country in terms of people's support for this kind of approach. Combine that with rising interest rates, high global inflation, and we need to make sure that we're supporting British Columbians however we can right now. The reality that we face is the federal government's requirement is still in place. If they do remove that requirement, two things will happen. One is we'll remove the carbon tax for everyday British Columbians, for the farmers, for the truckers, for the average British Columbian. The second thing is we believe that climate change is a real and present threat, unlike John Rusted, who thinks it's a hoax. And so we will continue to ensure, and we will ensure, that the big polluters are paying their fair share. That's the approach that we believe British Columbians support, consistent with their values. They want to see strong climate action and recognizing the realities. People are under stress right now.
Our next question will come from Rob Buffum from CTV News. Go ahead, Rob.
Oh, thanks for taking my question. My first question, Premier Eby, is you said in response to Katie that you and Premier Eby would have the same position on the consumer carbon tax, but that's not entirely true. It's that, I mean, Premier Canoe has said this past spring that he opposed it. This is the first time you publicly said that you would take steps to would end the consumer carbon tax that the federal government did.
So, Rob, what is the question?
My question is, is it not correct that you have held a different position than Premier Pinto?
Oh, I see.
Consumer carbon.
Yeah, Rob, look, I was hopeful. You know, I believed and still believe that a price on carbon is and can be an effective tool, which is why I think that big polluters need to pay in this province. We've had a consensus in British Columbia on an effective carbon tax for about a generation now. And I've watched as a series of decisions from the federal government, including unsustainable hikes in the amount of money that people have to pay, exempting certain provinces and products, and treating different provinces differently, has really politicized the issue and made it difficult for British Columbians. And so we're recognizing two things. One is where British Columbians are at, that they need the support right now. And the second, that climate change is real. We need to continue to take action on that. And so by going after the big polluters, making sure that they pay while protecting everyday British Columbians, we think this is the path forward for our province.
And Rob, do you have a follow-up question?
I do. We've talked about the federal government's position on this and how that influences your decision. I'm just wondering if you can weigh in on how much of the decision is motivated by BC Conservatives, you know, being able to buy two or two, three chickens with the money saved from carbon tax. How much of today's decision is motivated by the provincial election less than 6 weeks away?
Well, I'll tell you this, there's a really stark choice between us and the BC Conservatives on the issue of climate change and taking climate action. To have a leader of a party in modern British Columbia that doesn't believe in high school level science, that believes that climate change is a hoax, that says that we're all carbon beings, therefore that carbon can't pose any threat to British Columbians, even as homes flood and our forests burn and we have smoky summers and heat domes. There is a very stark choice between us and the BC Conservatives. If people want strong climate action, they want a government committed to the hydrogen economy future that we're seeing. Already more than $1 billion in private investment and zero carbon fuel in our province as we transition here in this province towards a low carbon future. If they want a government that continues to take action to protect them from the impacts of climate change, and they want us to work with other governments across Canada and around the world to take action on this, then there's really only one choice on the ballot, and that's the PC NDP.
Coming back to the room, we have a question from Tina House from APTN. Go ahead, Tina.
First of all, I just want to say, Tanase, to Premier Kinew, welcome to Vancouver. Very nice to see you. Rights in this province if
re-elected? Well, much like our climate change position, it's a reality-based position. We're advancing reality-based politics here in British Columbia against the Conservatives. The reality is that Indigenous people in this province have rights that are protected by the Constitution, and that the path forward for our province that will ensure prosperity for every British Columbian is working in partnership with Indigenous people, not fighting them in court. I don't want to be too blunt about it, but John Rustad's position on Indigenous people, to have a candidate in Victoria that is so openly racist against Indigenous people, to say that Indigenous people need to give back the wheel and the iPhone if they want to advance rights and title claims, and to have that as a candidate that you are advancing, you're saying, this is a good person that I would like to welcome into the Legislative Assembly of British Columbia. That openly racist, hateful positioning, coupled with a commitment to roll back the rights of Indigenous people in this province and to attack them and to only enter agreements where it's economically to the advantage of a certain group of people in the province of BC, that will set us back a generation in a couple of ways. One is around the need to urgently develop a prosperous economy for everybody. How do we grow our economy in British Columbia if we're fighting with Indigenous people every step of the way through court? Projects will be held up for years. Two, we have a group of people who are living in grinding poverty in our province. Any time that we have people that are can't see a future for themselves, they can't build a life for themselves in this province, all of us pay the price in different ways. And what we've seen again and again is when we partner with Indigenous people to raise and increase the opportunities for nations, we see the whole region and the whole province benefit again and again and again. One of the biggest mines in BC history that just hit substantial start construction, KSM up in the Northwest, 1,800 jobs. This is in direct partnership with Tahltan First Nation, Northwest British Columbia. And that is the path forward for us. It's a more prosperous future for all of us. It's more jobs. It's better paid jobs right across this province. It's people not living in grinding poverty. It's everything that we hope for and value as British Columbians, us working together as a province to improve and make life better for every single British Columbian. It's what I want for my daughter. It's what I want for all my kids. That's what I want for every child in British Columbia to grow up in a province where we're working together to improve this province. We're not fighting each other.
And Tina, do you have a follow-up question?
On the subject of human rights and so forth for Indigenous people, MMIWG has affected every single province, community, city, small town across this country. In the room today is Lorelei Williams, family member and international advocate on the subject. Things aren't getting any better. The National Inquiry wrapped up. We're still seeing so many women and girls going missing. What is your commitment to help stop that MMIWG crisis that we are in?
Thanks. Hey, Lorelei. Nice to see you. The recommendations from the inquiry are part of what we use to design the work that we're doing in partnership with Indigenous people in the province. Everything from basic things like our program provincially to build and fund housing on reserve, which technically is federal responsibility, but we're doing it to make sure that people have a decent place to live. They don't have to leave their home communities to go to urban centers where they don't have connections